Shabbos Daf Tesvav. So going back to what Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel, that there were 18 laws that Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel were discussing, and they argued on all of them. However, we have a brace that says they actually agreed on all of these 18 laws. So how can Rabbi Yehuda say in the name of Shmuel that they argued on all of them? So the answer is that on that day that they were discussing them in the attic, they argued on them on all 18, but the next day, Beis Hillel went and they agreed with Beis Shammai. They changed their minds and agreed with Beis Shammai. Rav Huna said that Hillel and Shammai argue only themselves. They only argue three times. So what are these three cases? So the first is that Shammai says that you take challah from dough that has at least one kav of flour. Hillel says you need two kavim of flour to take challah of dough. And the Chacham say you need a kav and a half of dough to take challah from. When they increased the units of measure in Zippori, they changed how they viewed a kav, how much was considered a kav. So they changed it that you needed five riva'im. It's called a riva'im because it's a reva is a quarter. So this is a quarter of a lug. So you needed five riva'im. So a one and a quarter lug. That's how much when they changed the measure, you had to take one and a quarter's lug. You needed one and a quarter's lug worth of dough to take challah. Rabbi Yossi says if you had exactly five revaim, you would be potter from taking challah. However, if you had anything more than five revaim, then you would take challah. So that's the first machlokas between Shammai and Hillel. How much dough is required to take challah? The second is that Hillel says you need a full hin of drawn water to disqualify a mikvah, because we had said that drawn water makes you tamei. So if you have a full hin of that water, a hin is a measurement, then that would, in a mikvah, that would disqualify the mikvah. And even though hin is a weird measure to use, that's more used in the Torah and things like that, we don't often see that in the Gemara. The Gemara explains that Hillel used the word hin because that the measurement of hin, because that is what his Rebbeim used. And we know from Brachos Daf Mem Zayin that you're supposed to use the exact same language as your Rebbeim used. So that's why Hillel used the same language of a hin as his Rebbeim. Shammai says it's nine kav of drawn water, which disqualifies a mikvah. The Chachamim say it's three lug of drawn water, which disqualifies a mikvah. And then we had these two weavers that came and testified that Shmaya and Avtalion said that it was three lug, which disqualifies a mikvah. So both Hillel and Shammai, and obviously the Chachamim who say three lug, they all agreed and accepted this halacha. The third machlokas is that Shammai said that women are tamei from the first time that they see a discharge. Hillel says that they actually are retroactively tamei from their last exam, meaning that even if the last time they checked themselves and didn't see anything was like 2 days ago, and now they're seeing something, they would retroactively be tamei from 2 days earlier, 2 days prior, and anything they touched or anything like that would become tamei within that 2 day period. The Chum say they kind of have like an in-between stance. They say that their retroactive Tumah does go to the last exam, but this is only up to a day. So it goes to the last time they examine themselves and check, but only up to a 24-hour period. It's not going to go beyond 24 hours. And if they had multiple exams on the same day, then the retroactive Tumah would go to the last time they examine themselves. Fine, so those are the three machloksim between Hillel and Shammai. But is it true that there are no other disagreements between Hillel and Shammai? But we have a Mishnah that says that Hillel says on Yontiv, you have to lean your hands on a carbon. They require doing the smicha on the carbon, where you push down on the carbon that you'd bring on Yontiv. But Shammai says, no, on Yontiv, you can't do this leaning on the carbon. You're not allowed to do this. So this is clearly another machlokas. No, because when Rav Huna counted his three, he wasn't including arguments that there were other people that were part of this, because there were other Rebbeim who were part of this machlokas. It wasn't just directly Hillel and Shammai. However, we have another brisa which says that when you harvest grapes for the wine press, Shammai says that they're susceptible to Tumah, and Hillel says they're not susceptible to Tumah, because we know that food in general is not susceptible to Tumah, so here it's a special case, and Hillel and Shammai are arguing here. No, because this is different, because this Hillel said they're not susceptible. However, once he heard Shammai's arguments, he immediately agreed with Shammai. So it wasn't really an argument. He didn't hold his position. He just said, he said it shouldn't be susceptible, but then Shammai immediately won him over. So we had these two Rabbi Yossis Yossi ben Yoezer ish Tzreda and Yossi ben Yochanan ish Yerushalayim, who made two gzeiras. They said that all the land outside of Eretz Yisrael would be tame. If you come in contact with that land, it's tame, you're tame, and they said that glass can be susceptible to tuma. However, why do we say that they decreed tuma on Chutz La'aretz, on the outside of Eretz Yisrael? We know that it was the Rebbeim 80 years before the Chorban, before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, that that's when this decree came about. Because Rav Kahana says that Rabbi Yishmael bar Rabbi Yossi, who was the son of Rabbi Yossi, he got ill, and they went and asked Rabbi Yishmael, they said, please tell us some of your father, Rabbi Yossi's, tell us so much of his teachings. He said, all right, fine. So 180 years before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the Romans started to spread out all over Israel. 80 years before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, they declared Tuma on Chutz La'aretz. So 80 years before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, they decreed that Chutz La'aretz would be Tame, and they decreed that glass could become Tame. And 40 years before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the Sanhedrin moved from inside the Beis HaMikdash in the Lishchas Hagazus, where they met inside the Beis HaMikdash, to the Chanuyos, which was another place on Har HaBayit. So that's where they moved. So why is it important to say that Sanhedrin moved? It's because Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avdimi says to teach that from the time when they moved, they no longer judged penalty laws like fines and things like that. However, is that true? You don't need to be inside the Beis HaMikdash to judge those laws, to judge those cases. So rather, it means that they didn't judge capital cases once they were outside. But either way, it still says here that these decrees on the glass and on the lands outside of Eretz Yisrael were passed 80 years by the Rebbeim 80 years before, not by these two Rabbi Yossis. So rather, no. We might say that the two Rabbi Yossis were 80 years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. However, we have a brace that says Hillel and Hillel's son Shimon and Shimon's son Gamliel and Gamliel's son Shimon were these Nisim who were, while the Beis HaMikdash was around, starting from 100 years earlier, starting with Hillel 100 years before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. And these were the Nesiim of that time. However, we know that the two Rabbi Yossis were way before that. So the two Rabbi Yossis couldn't have been 80 years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So rather, there were different kinds of gzeiras. The two Rabbi Yossis said that the dirt itself of outside of Eretz Yisrael would be Tameh, and if it came in contact with Truma, you would have to burn it. But they didn't say anything about the air of outside of Eretz Yisrael. The Rebbeim, 80 years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, said that you have to suspend the Truma that came into contact with the airspace of the lands outside of Eretz Yisrael. We remember we said that suspending it means that you're not sure if it's Tameh or not Tameh, so you just have to leave it and let it rot. However, what does this mean? That it only took one gzera to require burning the Truma for coming into this Suffolk Tuma area? We know that Ilfa said that the original decree that they said on your hands, when the Rebbeim said that your hands, unwashed hands, would be Tame, was the original decree for that was that if Truma came into contact with those hands, that you would burn it. However, it's from the way that he says it, it seems like only by hands the original decree was to burn it. But by everything else, the original decree was not to burn it. So how can we say that the original decree by the Chutz La'aretz lands was to burn it? So rather, the two Rabbi Yossis said that you have to suspend Truma that came into contact with the ground, nothing with the air. And the ones 80 years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash said that you burn the Truma that came into contact with the ground, and you suspend the ones from the air. However, we have another Mishnah which seems to say that in Usha, which was a much later time period, that's when they declared the Tuma on Chutz La'aretz, because the Mishnah says we have six cases of Tuma that we're not sure if it's Tame or not, so we burn the Truma. The first is a Beis HaPras, where we don't know, it's a field, and we don't know where in the field the grave is, but we know there's a grave in that field, so we just assume the entire field is Tame. The next is the dirt of Chutz La'aretz. The next is a garment of an Ama Aretz, because we assume that his wife might have sat on this garment while she was a Nida, and then it made a Tame, but since he's an Ama Aretz, you know, he's unlearned, he doesn't know the difference. The next is utensils that you found in the street. We're not sure if they're Tame or Tar, so we just assume that they're Tame. The next is if you see spit in public, because we don't know, maybe it came from a zav, and we know that the spit of a zav is tame. Urine, because again, the urine of a zav, it would be tame, even if it's next to animal urine, because animal urine is tahor, but we're still going to say that still, even if they're right next to each other, and there's a good chance it also came from an animal, both urines came from an animal, we're still just going to say that that urine that we're unsure about is tame, and Rabbi Yossi says, sorry, and in all these cases, even though we're not positive that these things are tameh, we would still burn truma for coming in contact with them. Rabbi Yossi says, we burn truma even when you're not sure if it came in contact with these suffix things, meaning you're not sure if your truma came into contact with the spit, for example, or if it came into contact with the dirt of chutzarts, for example, if it's in a private domain. The Chachamim say, if you have this doubtful contact, you're not sure if it came in contact, if it's in a private domain, you just suspend the truma, you just leave it, you can't burn it. However, if it was in a public domain, then we just assume it's tahor because we're much more lenient in a public domain. And Ula said that these were all decreed in Usha. And we saw that the dirt of Chutzlarts was one of these decrees. So how can we, so it was seemingly much later. So rather the two Rabbi Yossi say that their decree was that if it came in contact with the dirt, then it's suspended. You leave the truma there. If it was in the air, then there's nothing. The Rebbeim 80 years before the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash say that you suspend it in both cases if it touched. Excuse me, if it touched the dirt or if it touched the air, if it was in the airspace. And in Usha, they said that you burn it if it came in contact with the dirt and you suspend it if it was in the airspace. And the other part of the two Rabbi Yossi's decree, why do we say that glass can contract tumah? Reish Lakish says that since it's made from sand, we just view it as earthenware, which can contract tumah. However, if that's true that we view it as earthenware, then it shouldn't be able to become tahor in the mikvah, just like earthenware can't become tahor in the mikvah. However, we have a Mishnah that says pitch and musk can be considered blocks for glass vessels in the mikvah, meaning when you put a vessel it has to be totally clear, but pitch and musk can be blocks that would prevent the glass from being properly from becoming tahor in the mikvah. But clearly we see that glass can be put in the mikvah. So this case, the answer is that this case is talking about glass vessels that were perforated and got holes in them and were basically destroyed, and you poured lead into these holes to seal them up to make it a vessel that's, again, usable, because with all these holes, it's not usable, so you put the lead in it to make it usable. And this is going like Rav Meir, who says that we look at a vessel based on what makes it usable, which in this case is the lead, and lead, so we view this as a lead vessel, basically, and lead can become tahor in a mikvah. And a brisa supports this that says, that if you have a glass vessel that got broken, it has holes in it, and you filled it with lead, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says that Rabbi Meir says that it's tamei because he views it as metal, and metal can become tamei. And the Chacham say it's tahor because since it's a broken vessel, it has no status whatsoever because it's unusable. And so we just say that it's tahor because it's not metal, it's not earthenware, it's not anything. It's just a statusless vessel. It's a nothing, and therefore it's tahor shkayach.